I am a skunk. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I am a skunk. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I am a skunk. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I am a skunk. Oh my God. Welcome to another episode of A Slice of Ham. I know that I was supposed to release an episode on Thursday, but give me a break. I was going through it. This episode in particular is going to be very interesting. I don't know if I'm going to cover a true crime case. I haven't really done a whole lot of planning for this episode. I'm pretty much just going to wing it based on an idea that I have. So this episode, I think, is going to be very focused on mental health, on my mental health, on mental health in general. We're going to have a discussion on keeping our brains in check, keeping our brains pristine, keeping our brains shiny, and what happens when our brains are not pristine and shiny, because they almost always are not. The reason that I kind of want to get into mental health today is because today is an interesting day for me. I have a therapy session scheduled today, so I thought it would be fun to kind of record a little bit for the podcast before my therapy session and then record immediately after. I'm also using today as my first day of getting back into my gym routine. I have noticed that I have been gaining weight. I've been gaining a little bit of weight, and I recently went through a weight loss journey not too long ago, about a year and change ago, back when I was still a teacher. My highest weight, I believe, was around 365, 370 pounds, which is not good for a man who is 5'8". Also, I'm 5'8", by the way. So there was a moment in my life where I kind of had to make a change very quickly. I had to do a complete 180 based on my habits. And it was the first time that I went to the gym as an adult, seriously. And I was very nervous. I was very embarrassed. And I had to get help in a very unique way. And so this is my first time going back to the gym in a while, since I just got in a relationship and I've been very happy and I've been working on a move to another state and I've just been enjoying myself a little bit too much, enjoying the food, enjoying the life. So I noticed that my gut was pooching out a little bit too much. And I was like, I'm starting to feel a little bit uncomfortable when I walk again. I'm starting to feel it, like my 2XL shirts that used to fit very comfortably and a little bit loose are now not covering the belly so much anymore. And that's what I started noticing when I was first starting to let myself go. So now I need to do a 180. We stopped door dashing, about 2 weeks ago, started cooking at home, and that's been a significant improvement, but I need to get back into the gym. I like going to the gym. I enjoy doing cardio. I have a very specific routine, so I'll get into that, before I go to the gym and after I go to the gym. It'll be a nice before and after episode for us today. Before I get into all my mental health stuff, though, before I get into my mental health, I want to appreciate the people that listen to me today. I have been really enjoying this podcast thing. I've been really enjoying what I've been doing so far. I've been enjoying the response that I've been getting from people. Even though it's been a bit of a slow start, it's something that I don't want to... I didn't want to go into podcasting like, you have to succeed, you have to do well. I just wanted to make it fun. So it's just been interesting seeing the people that have picked it up and just the authentic responses. It reminds me of when I started doing the social media thing in the first place. It's very, very wholesome. And I'm looking at the Apple Podcasts reviews, and they're just so wholesome. They're just so American. They're just so wholesome. Mary Poppins left a review that said, "This is the best. You make me smile on my worst days, and I can't wait to replay these when I'm feeling down. You are an amazing person, and I love you so much." That is one of the sweetest things that I've ever read, and you didn't have to put that down, and you did. I really appreciate that. There are most of the people, I think, that are listening to the podcast are fans of mine already, so I can feel the love. Like this one from Portmanteau, Shout out to Port Momto. She's one of my biggest supporters on TikTok. She's one of my biggest supporters in general. I see her comments all the time. She is one of the fans that I want to meet. She says, Hammy's got a podcast? Yes, please. Hammy is the most authentically goofy and good-hearted guy. If you know him from TikTok, you already know you're going to love his podcast. If you're new here, I highly recommend getting to know this guy. He's a beautiful soul, and he's going places. Love you, Hammy. Oh, my God. Speaking of mental health, it's like moments when I'm feeling super down and hopeless, like when I'm feeling forgotten. If you didn't know this about me, I'm also a Cancer, so I tend to cry a lot. That's one of the things I'm kind of known for in my internet circle, is my penchant to cry. I'm okay with being vulnerable. I'm okay with showing all the emotions. That makes me very, it makes me whole. It fills me up. Oh, God. Someone said they ate a McChicken on their lunch break while listening to me read and tell about the Turpins, about the most grotesque family they've ever heard of. Oh, Lauren. 10 out of 10 will continue to listen to this podcast on your lunch break. 10 out of 10 would not recommend eating a McChicken while listening to said podcast, but so, so good. And Lauren makes a good point. You truly have no idea what's going on around you. You have no idea. That's why I think we're all so fascinated by true crime. And I think it's picked up in recent years because of the internet, because we have the ability to look up information at the touch of a button. We can read about these crazy stories. 20 years ago, we didn't have that wealth of information. We didn't have the ability to dive into rabbit holes the way we do now. So now we can, like nowadays, 2021, we can do research on amazing stories that we never even heard about. We can listen to full 911 calls from random events that just, in the grand scheme of things, like I was thinking about this, like I subscribe to a 911 channel called You Are Maker, Your Maker on YouTube, another one called True 911 Calls. And like one video will have three different 911 calls, and I listen to it and I'm like, geez, these are harrowing. I step back and I think, these are three individual like examples of the worst days of these people's lives. And we can consume it in 20 minutes. As true crime listeners, as people who are fascinated with the macabre, there are 7 billion people on this planet. Almost 8 billion people on this planet. That's a lot of crimes. That's a lot of stories. It just happens too much. You know, we have the ability to access this information, and there are so many people committing so many crimes just throughout the world that now that we have the access to this information, we're going to have a flood of these stories that we never heard about before. So I directly correlate the true crime boom to just the ability that we have to access all this information now. I learned about, oh God, next week's episode, the actual true crime story that I'm getting into. I'm talking about two cases that one of them is probably one of the most alarming incidences of a spree killing that I have ever heard about. But it's also indicative of a larger problem because we'll get into it next week. I'm not even going to get ahead of myself. Oh my God. I'm very, very excited for that. I'm just overwhelmed with the support. I'm overwhelmed with like the reviews. I'm just overwhelmed seeing the geographic location of the listeners. I have listeners in Brazil, Sao Paulo, Brazil. I have listeners in Sweden. I have listeners in the United Kingdom, from Norway, Ireland, Denmark. Shout out to Denmark. I've always said that Denmark is one of the coolest countries. Ugh. North Denmark is where my listenership is. Denmark, shout out to you. Shout out to Brazil. Shout out to Norway. Shout out to Canada. Canada, you're wonderful. Specifically, shout out to Manitoba. I don't know why I'm specifically shouting out Manitoba, probably because I'm looking at my viewership right now, and there's a 30% listenership from Alberta. That's great. Love Alberta. There's 15% from British Columbia. Love you. What a wonderful territory. but there's only a 1% viewership from Manitoba. And whoever you are in Manitoba that's listening, I want to dedicate this to you. Because that 1% means so much to me. Because you are taking the time out of your day to listen to me. Anybody from any region, whether it's Alberta, Ontario, British Columbia, or Florida, or Texas, or Sao Paulo, or North Denmark, or even West Denmark. We don't often talk about West Denmark, but it's there. So it's just interesting to see like 1% Manitoba. Like, who are you? What's your story? What are your crimes? What are your crimes? 1% from Manitoba. What are your crimes? Confess them to me. Gotcha. Get these motherfuckers. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much. I do want to delve a little bit into my mental health and my weight loss journey. And it goes back into when I was a student. When I graduated high school, I was supposed to go to a school of acting. I was supposed to go to a theater college. And my SAT scores weren't good enough at the time that I submitted my application for the college. I submitted my application in September. I auditioned for the school of theater in January. So there was a bit of a miscommunication. It ended up not working. So I decided to go to another school and just focus on teaching. I ended up having to transfer from the University of Central Florida to the University of South Florida because I forgot to reapply for housing, and my grades went down and I lost my scholarship, so I had to take out student loans and move back home. And that was hard. That was hard. That was admittedly very hard. Moving back home was very, very tough because I felt like such a burden. I lived back at home from the ages of 19 to 24. I was excited to move out and explore myself and really to give my parents a break, because I was not really the easiest child to raise. Being the big personality that I am, there were obviously some instances in my life where I was incredibly difficult to handle. So I wanted to explore who I was. I really found who I was in college, but moving back home was very, very tough because I felt like a child again. I felt like a burden on my parents. I felt like, oh God, I'm a leech on the belly. And it created some tension. So it got to the point where in my mind, I was like, it's better to not be seen or heard. Because when you walk out into the kitchen and your mom and dad come out of their room or something, or maybe they're in the living room, or they see you. And at the time, I had also been gaining weight during my final internship. I was just so stressed. I started drinking every day, which I wouldn't drink during any work hours, but as soon as I was done with my responsibilities, like 4 o'clock, the day was over, I would get home, and then 5 o'clock, I would crack open a cider, a 24-ounce can of alcoholic cider. I would drink 2 of those a night just to get myself toasty and to forget my stress. And obviously, that's not a healthy way to deal with things. That's not a healthy way to deal with things. And there was a lot of sugar in that cider. I started not moving. I started just eating fast food and just sitting a lot. And I gained like 150 pounds. I gained a lot of weight. So I was naturally depressed, and I felt like I was embarrassing. And that's a really hard realization to come to, because I've always deep down kind of felt that way. Like, I've always felt like I'm too obnoxious, like I'm too loud. I've always felt like I'm trying too hard to get people to like me. You know, that's part of being a class clown, or just a clown in general, is you want people to like you. I will not mince words. If there's one thing that I am, it's also self-aware. Teaching taught me to be very reflective, to be very self-reflective, and teaching definitely made me a better person, but we'll get into that later. Probably after therapy when we're in a better mood. I gained a bunch of weight. I felt like I was embarrassing. I felt like, oh, here's your son who was once good-looking and skinny and something to be proud of, and now he's a fat schlub. He's embarrassing. And people look at you different when you gain weight. People look at you differently. People treat you differently. People treat you differently when you start losing weight. People start giving you more respect. I felt a lot more pride in people when I started losing weight. Because it was like people were looking at me and like saying, oh, now you finally give a shit. Which, I mean, in my case, I can't speak for everybody, but 85, 90% of that, they were 100% correct. I didn't give a shit. I didn't care about myself. I was just trying to stay afloat to survive. I was trying to make it through school. And then once I graduated college, I was like, okay, you got to get a job. And then once I got a job, I was like, okay, I'm a teacher. School year starts next week. I got to figure out my curriculum, what I need to do for my classes, figure out lesson plans, come up with a scope and sequence, figure out what you're going to do with the 9 weeks. What are your tests? What are you going to be tested on? What are the benchmarks that you have to learn? Do you have a curriculum guide? I don't really have a curriculum guide, so I had to make it up all myself. There was a lot of stress, and admittedly, I did not handle it well. At all. Started drinking every day and just letting myself go. So at some point, like I just steadily gained weight throughout all my 3 years of teaching. And I just got worse and worse. I got more depressed. I was getting angry at myself. I finally moved out at the age of 24. That was right at the beginning of my third year of teaching. And I was just like, I don't care where I live. I'm going to get an apartment. I got to get out of here. The tension was a little bit too high. It was just like, I wanted to get a house, but I also wasn't saving enough money because admittedly I was spending a lot of my paychecks on alcohol. So I like alcohol and fast food. A lot of it was fast food. There were some nights, and mom, dad, if you're listening to this, I am so sorry, but there were some nights where I would get fast food 3 to 4 times a day. 3 to 4 times a day, whether it was like a dessert one at one place and then go back and get a snack. Like I was eating fast food a lot. I was letting myself go. I was not doing well. So at one point, midway through my third year of teaching, it was actually December of my third year of teaching, 2018 to 2019, I decided it was time for a change. That December, there was just a moment where I was just like, this is neither fun nor funny anymore. And I don't really want to get into the reason why I made the change. It's very dark. Maybe we'll get into that after therapy or at a later time, but I was just stressed out. I was depressed. I was frustrated with myself. I felt like a burden. I didn't want to be in the way. I just felt like a lot of what I was doing was wrong, even though I was really trying to be right. I have a big personality. I'm fairly obnoxious. And when I started working at my high school, I taught TV productions technology. So we made the morning show for the school. And there were times where I would, you know, be in videos with my kids. You know, I always made it a rule. I would never be in a video unless they asked me to. If they needed someone to play a teacher, I would be very much willing to do it. But there were some teachers who at the school took that as me inserting myself into their work, just wanting to insert myself into the spotlight. And it was never the case. My rationale is the kids in that class needed a leader because it was an easy A class before I came in, admittedly. It was, you know, a place where you go and you make a couple videos and you get your easy A. But I wanted to make it like a film production class, because that's what I was passionate about. And I wanted my kids to be passionate about it too. And I wanted to create a fleet of kids who could make a movie. That was my goal. I wanted to work there long enough to where my kids would make a feature film. That was my ambition. We never got there, but we made some really good stuff. So naturally, there were some teachers that were like, he's trying to take the spotlight. It was just like high school gossip. You're going to get that at any place. And I took it very, very, very personally. Because from my perspective, I was just trying to be a good teacher. I was just trying to get my kids interested in what they were doing. You know, I wanted to make a good show. And I wanted the other kids who were watching the show to like what they were doing. And if they needed a goofy fuck to play a teacher in a video, that's fine. I would jump at the chance to do it. It was fun. It was fun to make videos. It was fun to watch a product on the screen. We laughed so much in that class. Even though some parts of it was like a boiler room, we laughed. But I took a lot of the criticism personally, and I beat myself up about it. I tend to do that a lot. That's one facet of my mental health that I will freely admit that is a problem. I am so fucking hard on myself because, and I think I've done a lot of thinking about this through therapy and throughout my whole life. I mean, I've lived in a teeny tiny town, being a big personality, putting a lot of pressure on myself. There's been a lot of pressure also put on me to perform, to get good grades, to be a model student, a model citizen, a model person, to be exceptional, to be not just average, to be above average, to be exceptional. You got to take AP classes. You're going to do a sport. You're going to college. It's non-negotiable. You're doing scouts. We're putting you in soccer. There was a lot of stuff in my childhood that I didn't really want to do. Like, I didn't want to be in Boy Scouts, but I also, at the same time, can't be mad at my mom and dad for putting me in Scouts because it looks good on a resume. It instills responsibility. They were only doing what was best. But I have found that me, Casey Hamilton, I don't like the out of doors. I don't like going camping. I don't like being hot and sweaty. I like being cold. I like camping in the winter because it's cold and you don't sweat as much. It's cold. But I was a Boy Scout in fucking Florida. Mom, Dad, I love you, but what the fuck? Camping every month in the fucking Floridian wilderness? It's 99 degrees! Listen to me. I love my parents. I love everything that they have done for me. They have provided me with some wonderful opportunities. They are the two smartest people I've ever known. They have instilled me with the sense of humor that I have today. They showed me the movies that I fell in love with. They are the people that made me cool. They taught me how to be cool, and they're still teaching me how to be cool. But it doesn't change the fact that I don't like to be fucking sweaty. I don't know how a compass works. I do not know how to tie a knot. I was not a very good scout, but my dad was my scoutmaster, so I had to be on my P's and Q's. That adds a lot of pressure. So I think I internalized a lot of my, like, pressure. Do it. Perform. You gotta. I internalized it, and whenever I feel that I don't perform to expectations, I beat myself up. Sometimes literally. That's another portion of my mental health that I'm not exactly proud of, but I do not shy away from. And not a lot of people know about me. A lot of people know me on TikTok as a very fun, loving, wholesome, charismatic, just puppy dog energy golden retriever motherfucker. But they don't know that sometimes behind the scenes, I get very angry, not at like other people, but at myself. I get angry at myself a lot. Like, oh, if my computer is running slow. I don't know why that frustrates me so much, but my brain cannot regulate small frustrations from big ones. And I get hot, like, really, really quickly. And I only just now came to the conclusion that I have a chemical imbalance and I can't, it's really hard for me to work on that on my own. So I need therapy, I need psychiatry, I gotta have checks and balances just to keep that frustration in check. Because, I mean, I can remember being 8 years old and like the computer in my room being a little slow and me like slamming the mouse down on the counter and punching myself in the thigh and in the head because it didn't work. Taking a hardcover book and slamming it in like my forehead when I was 8 years old. And my parents do not know this. Because it's hard. That's very hard. Like, I hit myself when I'm mad. That's a hard thing to just come out and say to the people that love you because they want to keep you safe. And it's abnormal to do that. And that's a big thing that I'm working on. Luckily, the worst of it was when I was in high school, but even to this day, it still happens. And, you know, I would be doing you a disservice if I said that, like, once you reach a certain age, you become mentally well. And I'm going to be struggling with this throughout my entire life. There are people that struggle with depression their entire life. There are people that struggle with anxiety their entire life. There are people that struggle with agoraphobia their entire life. There are people that are afraid of fucking olives their entire life. Everybody has their own mental health issues. If there's one thing that's certain, it's that we're all a little fucked up in our own way. And my way just happens to be that I get very frustrated with myself very easily. I get angry at myself for not meeting my own perceived expectations. And I get angry in general when things like frustrate me in the right way, when like the sweet spot, when my buttons get pushed the right way. Technology is a big one. When things are like slow or not working or very vague, I get uncharacteristically angry and frustrated, and I just have to like bark a little bit. And that's not normal. That's not normal. It's inconvenient for other people. It's manipulative, and I don't like that part of myself. And there's also another factor of my mental health that I get angry at myself and so mad at myself for having these emotions at all. I get mad at myself for getting mad. I think to myself, if you could just fucking be normal, if you could just fucking cool it, if you could just learn how to figure it the fuck out, if you could learn how to be an adult, if you could learn how to be good, if you could learn how to just calm the fuck down and not be so angry, you could enjoy yourself. You could enjoy life. And obviously that's hyperbole. Obviously I do enjoy life. It's just in the moment, it feels like that frustrated, angry feeling is the only thing that I can feel or will ever feel again. And that's so irrational. A lot of people don't know this about me. A lot of people, I think even when I was in school, probably never knew this about me. I put an immense pressure on myself. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't know what the core is. I think of mental health like this. This is a very good analogy to wrap up mental health in. Everybody has their own nuclear core. It's like a nuclear bomb in your brain. Everybody has a nuclear bomb, and that nuclear bomb is the source of your mental health problems. That's like the key. That's like what is causing most of everything. I won't say that there's like a be-all end-all cause, but the biggest thing that people have to work on is a nuclear bomb. For me, it's my like frustration and pressure, the pressure that I put on myself, my feeling of like, I feel like I'm an idiot. I call myself stupid a lot for just little things. Like, I can't find the key on my key ring to put in the door. And I go, God, you fucking idiot. Why can't you find the key? What? And looking back on it, even right now, I'm sure you guys are listening. And I'm sure like, even me, like right now, I'm like, what are you talking about? You are an idiot because you couldn't find a, like you couldn't get to a key immediately. Dude, give yourself a break. This is what I mean when I get like real emotional. I'm tearing up right now and I'm trying not to because I have to talk, but like that's a hard thing to realize. I'm so hard on myself. And a lot of people on the internet see me as like, ah, fun loving puppy dog golden retriever dude. And for the most part, that's true. But when it comes to my outlook on myself, it's not. It's just not. And I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I can conclusively say that. I can confidently say that I'm working on it. But that still doesn't change the fact that anybody else, like if I saw somebody who was going through the same thing that I would be going through, I would go, dude, stop being so hard. I would list all of the reasons why that person was a good person. Why that person was exceptional, why that person shouldn't be putting so much pressure on themselves, shouldn't be talking to themselves so negatively, so fiercely, so violently, disrespectfully, I would shake them and go, "What the fuck are you doing? Do not talk to my friend that way." But the problem with me is that, number one, I've been doing this for so long that it's quite a hard habit to break. And number two, and I think this is my nuclear bomb, I can't think of more than one good thing to say about myself. I'm funny. When people ask me, "What are your good qualities? What makes you exceptional?" I can come up with, you know, the radio answer, the microphone answer. "Oh, well, I got this and this and that, and I have the ability to blah, blah, blah." But it really deep down, like, what do you value about yourself? What do you think people like about you? Why do you think people like you, really? Why do you think that people like you? Why do you think that people keep you around? The only thing I can think of: Funny. I'm funny. That's it. Total sad clown syndrome. And I fully recognize it, but it's hard to not be able to come up with good things about yourself. And I know I'm not the only one. It's just tough being so painfully self-aware that, like, I know for a fact I wouldn't say any of this to somebody else. I would be giving another person, if somebody else was doing this, I would be giving them so much advice. I would be giving them a laundry list. I'd be giving them a fucking manual of things. One thing that I am proud of myself of, and I directly attribute this to my teaching career, is teaching made me more empathetic. Teaching made me a better person. Teaching made me able to connect with people on an emotional level. And I think I was always able to do it, but I needed something to bring it out of me. I needed my kids to bring it out of me. Because before I was teaching, and specifically it was my eighth graders during my final internship, because I fell in love with those babies and I didn't think I was going to. I thought I was going to hate eighth grade, but I loved it. I loved those kids. I loved their raw passion for what they loved. I loved their energy. I loved seeing them, like, the aha moments of teaching. Like, ah, now we get it. I lived for that. And there were just so many kids with so many interesting stories. And you could tell that they were going to grow up and do amazing things. And my eighth graders graduated last year, and they did. Most, if not all of them, grew up to be amazing kids. And if any one of you guys are listening right now, Mrs. Harper's eighth grade English class, know that I have never forgotten you. I have never forgotten that beautifully weird seventh period class. I never forgot that horrible fifth period class. You guys were horribly well behaved, but god damn it, I couldn't help but love you just as much. I remember the improv games that we played the first day of school. I remember that one day when we were outside at the patio, like one of my first days, and one kid said something shitty to me, and I got really mean on him, and then my seventh period class at the time looked at me like, "Oh, this intern's not playing around." I still have the little folded toy boat that one of my kids made. I remember those days fondly. I still have some of the art that my kids drew me from my internship. So it was that period where I really started to have to get better at, like, recognizing when somebody was going through it, when someone needed a pep talk, when someone needed a pick-me-up, when someone needed to be reminded of how proud they make people. It was during teaching that I really became a much more empathetic person. I don't think I was as empathetic as I should have been without teaching, because I think that ability was always there. But the main thing that was at the front of my brain was, like, how do you get people to like you? And you know how you get people to like you? You listen to them. You gas them up. You be a source of positivity. I figured that out mainly during my first year of college, but also through teaching and through social media, this whole journey. I thank my students for making me a better person. I thank my students for not giving me empathy, because I had empathy, most of us. There's only a select few, 1%, the, you know, sociopaths and psychopaths and serial killers and blah, 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 the people that cannot empathize. Serial killers mainly. But I will say that my students took my empathy and polished it, sharpened it, made it usable. I will never forget the beauty of just the families that we created in those classes. So teaching definitely saved my life, but also teaching was one of the things that put me on a spiral downward. I didn't start drinking until my final internship, and it wasn't the kids' fault. It's not the kids' fault. If there are any of my students listening, that was not your fault. It was just the stress. The stress of all the work that goes into it, of all the planning, of all just the newness of it all. And then internship, I wasn't getting paid to do it. My car was breaking down at the same time. I wasn't making a lot of money. I was just going through it. And it just carried over because, you know, it's easy to, when you get done with your responsibilities, go home and crack open an alcoholic beverage and just numb yourself. But after a while, numbing myself didn't work. So I had to make a change. That leads me into really the pivotal moment that December. It was time for a change. I was at my heaviest weight. It was December of 2019, and I was like, I need to make a change. So I decided to go on a little journey, and I asked my best friend, Brian Keith Ross, who, this is probably your first introduction to him on this podcast. I want to say that Brian Ross is, don't cry. Brian Ross is one of the, he is the greatest man I've ever met. Like, him and my father. He's one of the best men I've ever met. He is my best friend. I've known him as my best friend for 12 years now. And I can't express to you guys how solid of a foundation he has in my heart. He is stuck there forever. He and his fiance has become another one of my best friends just by being with him, because their relationship has blossomed, and she is a phenomenally cool individual. She's wonderfully smart. She is capable. She is fucking strong. Just like Brian is. Brian is smart, capable, intelligent. Not just smart, he's intelligent. They're both intelligent. They both have an incredible intelligence about them that is rivaled by few people I know. They are very savvy. They are cool. They are suave. They are understated. They can convey a compliment to you with just a look. But normally they don't do that. They go out of their way to go, okay, all right, go ahead, fuck it up. They're two of the most incredible people I've ever met. And Brian was the first person that I asked. I was like, I need help. I need help to lose weight. Because he had been going back to the gym and losing weight. And I was like, I don't know how to do it. I've tried going to the gym before, but I wasn't really into it. I had tried eating healthy before, but I wasn't really into it. I didn't know how to do it on my own. Brian helped me figure out how to eat better, taught me how to weigh my food, get you a kitchen scale, he said, do it by the serving sizes. That helped me a lot. Cutting things down by serving sizes helped me a lot, not to just like, you know, I wasn't worried about calories. I was not counting calories. I never have counted calories. I was only doing it by serving sizes because I did not trust myself not to overeat. I didn't trust myself not to pour more than I, you know, needed. Then I asked Brian, I was like, can you go to the gym with me? I would like to go to the gym. I would like to get back into it. I don't know what to do. I'm embarrassed. And I don't get embarrassed that often. I'm a class clown. I'm a very big personality. But this was a very vulnerable moment in my life where I had to admit, you know, even to my best friend, it was hard to admit that, like, I'm embarrassed to go out in public the way that I look. I'm embarrassed to try and go out in public to get better because I don't want people to look at me in the state that I'm in. Constantly. I was constantly worried about people staring at me, people looking at me. My stomach sticking out too far. I would have to hike up my pants, you know, pull your pants up over your stomach so your stomach wouldn't hang out of your shirt. And I was worried about people laughing at me. I was worried about people being disappointed in me that I had let myself go. I could just tell. You can get that burning feeling in the back of your head that people are looking at you like, poor guy, when is he going to take care of himself? And so it was time for a change. And so Brian immediately was like, all right, yeah. He brought me as a guest to Planet Fitness because he had a Black Card membership and they could bring a guest. And he brought me along on his routine, 3 days on, 1 day off. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it because Brian has taken the time out of his day to help me. And the least I could do was try. The least I could do was try, you know? The least I could do was go there and not half-ass it. Not take this opportunity for granted. And so what I found worked for me was pretty weird, and I still do it to this day. It's what I'm going to be doing today when I go to the gym, and I'll tell you about it in more detail. I'll tell you about how the actual, like, going back to the gym goes, but I'll get into my first actual gym visit, you know, my first couple gym visits right now. What I found that I like to do, I go to the gym, I put on a pair of sunglasses, I know, I'm a douchebag, I'm one of those douchebags that wears sunglasses to the gym. I can't look people in the eyes though, I can't make eye contact with you. If you can't see me, I can't see you, I'm not there, because what I do is I go onto the treadmill and I dance. I turn on my music and I strut, just dance to the music, do your thing, and don't care if people watch. I don't care if people see, I'm dancing on the treadmill to the beat. I don't give a shit. I don't look at people. I'm just in the zone going to my music and I'm strutting. And it may look obnoxious to some, but God damn it, by the end of 30 minutes, I am sweating harder than most of the people in the treadmill line. And I found that it just worked for me. It was fun. It was fun to dance and I was losing weight at the same time. And that's how it started. And then Brian, after cardio, would take me to some weight groups and I would do two muscle groups at a time. And then I would do a different cycle when I came back just so I wouldn't be sore all the time. And it worked. And I found that I started enjoying going to the gym. I never liked it. I found that I like it. I like going to the gym and dancing. I like going to the gym and strutting on the treadmill and doing my thing and sweating. For the first time in my life, I enjoyed sweating. And what a weird thing to get emotional about. But, like, I hate sweating. I hated camping and sweating and doing that shit. But here I am at the gym sweating my ever-loving dick off. And loving it. And loving it. So, I've got therapy today. I've got therapy in about, less than an hour. Shit. So I've got to make it quick. And then after therapy, I'm going to go to the gym. And I'm just going to tell you what I think about both experiences. Probably going to talk about the gym more so than therapy, but who knows? So I'm going to pause right here, go to therapy, go to the gym, and come back with my thoughts and concerns. Thank you for listening to A Slice of Ham, and we'll be right back after these important messages. Okay. All right. It's been about a couple hours. I went to the gym for about an hour. I did 30 minutes of cardio. Normally, I like to start light with 30 minutes of cardio,
and then I work out like one or two muscle groups, I'm definitely feeling sore. But overall, I feel very euphoric. I feel a sense of accomplishment. I feel like I did something. And I noticed that I forgot how it felt to feel that way. I forgot how it felt to like exercise and do what I wanted to do. I took the treadmill all the way down to the left. I put my sunglasses on. I didn't make eye contact. And it felt like I was really making a step forward. But my mental health discussion also came into play because even while I was on the treadmill, I found myself checking TikTok. I found myself checking TikTok. I found myself checking messages. I found myself checking my view count. I found myself just checking in general. And this, I think, plays into my mental health as well. I talked about this with my therapist today as well. One of my big hurdles that I've had to overcome lately, the past like maybe 3 or 4 months, I have really been hyper aware of the fact that I have not taken a break. There was a time where I took a break. For those of you that may not know, I am a TikTok creator. I post videos on TikTok pretty late in the podcast to call that out. But I have been posting nonstop pretty much for about a year and a half, almost 2 years now. So naturally, it's going to take its toll on people. My therapist actually told me, she was like, my advice for you, like at the end of the session, she was like, take a vacation, take a vacation, take a vacation. I know much. She was like, I know money is tight right now. Take a vacation as soon as you can. Because we're saving up for the move and everything. I've just been very aware of the fact that ever since I started doing TikTok full time, and people did warn me about this, but it's another thing when you go through it. And I was prepared for it, but I don't think 100%. I think I was only 90% prepared for just how unstable it feels. It is incredibly unstable when the majority of your bills depend on the TikTok Creator Fund, which, it's very hit or miss. The algorithm is also very hard to track, keep track of. And I slowly morphed from, you know, having fun posting videos to doing it as a job and becoming sort of obsessed with the view count. Like if I saw a low view count, I would instantly think, oh, I'm not going to be able to pay rent this month, which is dangerous. That's dangerous. It's why I wanted to pursue voice acting and get, you know, paid doing freelance gigs here and there, you know, just throw my voice wherever I can, just to give myself something to do. It's why I started podcasting, because I just had to give myself something to do. Something that didn't feel like a job. I have forgotten how to relax. I've forgotten how to be alone. My therapist and I did an exercise today called mindful meditation, where for 2 minutes, I just sat, I breathed, and I just, whatever thoughts came to my head, I just, you know, you're supposed to let them come and then let them go, almost as if it's like a sunrise and a sunset. And the first time we did it, because I asked to do it again, the first time we did it, you know, we were leading up to it, and immediately I started crying. I started crying because I was just afraid. I was afraid of being alone in my own head. And that didn't happen when I was teaching. I will say that. You know, I don't really, I could never go back to full-time teaching because it's just very taxing. And this is genuinely what I want to do. Despite all the frustrations with TikTok and with social media as a career and with following your dreams this way, there are going to be bumps and hurdles in the road. But overall, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But that does not mean that you can ignore the ill effects. And I've just been go, go, go for the longest time, and I have not taken a break. I forgot how to take a break. So I need to figure out how to do that. While I was on the treadmill today, just bopping around, having fun and feeling just the adrenaline and the hot breath and the sweat, I was just like, oh man, I forgot what this felt like. Because inadvertently, I don't even think I meant to do this, but I got so, I'm so wrapped up. I am so wrapped up in the numbers, you know, and TikTok also, you know, people talk about shadow bans on TikTok and I have experienced it a little bit. I don't complain about it because I'm just lucky to be here at all. That's what I think. I'm like, I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to have the platform that I have. I deal with the peaks and valleys as they come, but that doesn't make it not frustrating. And for creators that are genuinely shadow banned and keep getting banned and, you know, keep having their voices silenced, it's incredibly frustrating. It's taxing, you know. I post a video that I think is good and it gets like 11,000 videos in 24 hours, which doesn't seem like, you know, again, I have to remind myself that those are 11,000 people, those are 11,000 viewers, but when you do this as a job, when you're, you know, dependent on the creator fund, it warps your mindset. It warps your mindset into, oh no, I'm not going to be able to pay the rent. With 6 million followers, you would think that the people that pressed that follow button would see the content that they followed, you know, but it's just hard to gauge where the algorithm is. So I try not to complain about it. I try not to think about it, but the nature of it being my job now, it's hard to separate that. It's hard to close the door on it. It's hard to not obsess over it. And it's hard not to also put immense pressure on myself like I always have done my entire life. Mental health is like there's a nuclear core in the middle of your brain, and wrapped around that nuclear core is an octopus that's tying itself into knots. And if you're not careful, if you don't stay on top of your mental health, you pull one arm away from the octopus, you untie a little bit of the knot, and then you go, oh, great, I got it. And then you look back at the octopus, and it's in a totally different configuration, a totally different knot. And then you go, okay. You let go of the arm that you just untied to try and figure out this new knot, and then it comes back and ties itself into a different knot. Before you know it, you're just continually trying to untie this knot, and if you're not too careful, you could be doing that forever. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. And so a good portion of it is figuring out what exactly the nuclear core is that the octopus has itself wrapped around. And I think, I don't know if the nuclear core is the obsession over the views or the inability to remember how to relax. But social media creation is not all sunshine and roses. To focus on the positives for a bit, I am blessed to be able to have the job that I have, to be able to have the avenue that I'm able to have. And lately I've been forgetting the positives. You know, I've been forgetting the positives apart from the people, apart from the followers. I always try to remember that I wouldn't be here without them. But it's hard. It's hard sometimes to separate the numbers. It's hard not to obsess. It's hard for YouTubers not to obsess over their subscriber count and their view count when they're getting paid for it, I'm sure. It's tough, you know, but it's in moments like these where I have to sit back and tell myself, even though you have forgotten how to relax, even though you're just go, 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 even though you have just exhausted yourself to the bone, you know, it's, you're blessed to be able to do what you do. To get sentimental for a moment, before I was a TikToker, a social media personality, before I was an influencer. I was a high school teacher who had two friends, two people that I associated with, and then the rest of my friends were high schoolers, were my students, my kiddos. I would go home after work, drink, sit, eat junk food, watch bullshit shows, go to bed, and do it all over again. I forgot how many voices I could do through teaching. It was through TikTok that I remembered how many voices I could do. The plankton, yes. The Krabby Patty secret formula. The Mr. Krabs, plankton, plankton. You got to be careful when you scream that into the microphone. Plankton. Muddy. Muddy. Anchovies. You know? I've just met such incredible people throughout this journey, both on the creator side and on the fan slash follower side. Just the amazing humans that I've been able to meet. It's been amazing. It's been amazing, the things that I've been able to do, the people that I've been able to associate with. It's incredible. It's very incredible. I have never had this level of support. And I wouldn't have been able to chase my dreams without all of the followers that I have shouting at me like, you can do it, you can do it, go do it. I don't think I would have had the courage to do it on my own. And in a way, I'm not doing it on my own. So it's just a time where I have to acknowledge the good. Acknowledge the good. You know, there was one time when I was on that big road trip, Ham Trip 2020. God, the first road trip I had ever taken in my life. And I went across so many states. I'll talk about the Ham Trip like in detail at some point. The main place that I remember most vividly is a place called Lynchburg, Virginia. Lynchburg, Virginia. It's like, why would you go to Lynchburg, Virginia? I was passing through. And I remember I did a meet and greet in public. I did it at a public park so people could stay 6 feet away. I brought like signed cans of Spam, signed puppy calendars from the Dollar Tree. And there were six people. I tend to breathe a lot, by the way. I'm a big fat, so I breathe a lot. Anyway, we had a little meet and greet and there were six people that showed up and it was just amazing. It was intimate. We cried. I'm a Cancer. I'm a crier. I can't help it. It was just a wonderfully intimate moment where people came together to just appreciate each other. And I went live on TikTok before that meet and greet, and there was one person that was like, oh, I wish I could come, but I have a migraine, I can't drive. And then I was like, oh, pick a place that's like walking distance or close by where you think you could drive so that, you know, pick a public place so that you're not freaked out. And we went to a yogurt shop, and I gave her a signed can of Spam. I said, what's up? And in that yogurt shop, there were people out in the parking lot. There were people, you know, out on the side patio. At some point, we're in the yogurt shop. It's just me and this fan. And then all these other, the people in the parking lot start coming in and they sit like at the chairs. And then one of the people out on the patio opens the side door and says, you're really going to make him pay for all that? And then I turn, I go, huh? And then I see all the people on the back patio are staring at me. And all the people from the parking lot have come inside and are staring at me. And I'm like, what the, hi, is everybody, hi? I wave to the people out on the back patio and then they instantly get up and walk in. Apparently, there ain't nothing to do on a Friday, Saturday night but hang out at the Yogurt Yeti in Lynchburg, Virginia. So I was at the Yogurt Yeti in Lynchburg, Virginia, and pretty much the whole damn place recognized me, and that has never happened to me before in my life. I was a high school teacher at this point. I'm thinking like, oh, this is a fun road trip, and then I have to come back in August to teach my children. This was the first moment where I was like, maybe you got something here. Maybe you can ride this wave to a more stable place in the entertainment industry. So when I came back home, I just decided to go for it. I was very euphoric. It was now or never. It was now or never. And the first person who, you know, pushed me towards like, go leave your job, take this opportunity, was my own mother. She is also a teacher at the high school where I used to work. But she was the first person to say, you've always been a star ever since you were born. I've always known it. This is your opportunity. Don't waste it. She was cautious. She was like, I don't know. Deep down, she was like, I don't know if this is going to work. This is very new. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep himself afloat. But maybe, you know, just let's see. And she took a chance, just like I took a chance, just like you guys took a chance on me. And here I am, still doing it. So that's a positive. That's a positive. Being able to create for you guys. Even though some days I may have no motherfucking motivation, I may have no drive, I may have no ideas, I may sit and scroll through TikTok going, okay, what trend could I do? What dance can I do? And then I go, I don't fucking know. And I immediately get tired. Should I go live? I don't know. I always feel like I have to be on. Like I have to be, hey guys, oh, hey. And I don't. I think. I don't know. I don't know. That was the chair. That wasn't me. I didn't fart. That was my feet on the chair. I'm trying to make the noise again, and it's not making the noise. Don't fuck with me. Don't do this to me. Oh, not in front of my friends. Okay. I've always said, no matter if it's like my friends in high school or acquaintances that I meet in life, or whether it's my TikTok followers or people that I'm really close with, I always say, if you need anything, even for a laugh, I'm here. You know, if you scroll by my feed, if you scroll onto my account and one of my videos makes you laugh and forget about like the awful day that you had or the awful week that you've been having, or if you keep coming back for more, if there's something about me, I don't know what that you like. Holy shit. I'm so grateful. But I don't know what it is personally. If there's something about me that keeps you coming back for more, if there's some way that I can distract you from a bad day, I've done my job. That's what I'm here for. I consider my content on the internet now that I've been doing it for a little while, I'm entry-level positivity. You know, you can look at any one of my videos and get a laugh no matter who you are, what creed you are, what race you are, what gender you are, no matter who, what type of person you are, I am for all people except for bigots and idiots and homophobes and morons. Just, you know, my motto is just be cool. Just be cool. Have a good time, you know? I've spent a lot of time trying to please a lot of people, trying to keep people happy, trying to keep people entertained. I'm a natural-born entertainer, but, you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I put too much pressure on myself. And I wish that I didn't. I wish that I didn't do that a lot of the time. But if my content provides an escape for people, then I'm doing it for a reason. I'm doing something right. There was a lot of rambling done on this podcast. I mean, mental health is one big fat gray area. It's gray. It's a mix of black and white. It's all of the colors combined, really. And the one thing that we all have in common is that we're all a little screwed up in our own way. But it doesn't make us bad people. It doesn't make us hard to be around. It makes us who we are. Whatever your reason for sticking with me, whatever your reason is for following me, whatever your reason is for keeping up with me, the one thing that I have to say is thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for encouraging me. And it makes me want to take care of myself so that I can keep bringing what you love. You can't fill from an empty cup. And I admittedly have been empty for quite a while, and I forgot how to fill myself back up. I need to learn how to relax again, but I think I can do it. It's not too late for me. This was a bit of a rough episode. It was a bit of a heavy episode, but I'm glad to talk about it. I'm glad to give some insight on, you know, the behind the scenes of, you know, the creator world, the behind the scenes of my mental health and my life. If you stuck around this long, thank you. I appreciate you more than you know. So from all of us here at A Slice of Ham, I want to congratulate you for being a wonderful person. I want to congratulate you for sticking around. I want to congratulate you for being so supportive. And I just want to congratulate you for being you. If nobody told you that they're proud of you, I'm proud of you. If nobody told you that they love you today, I love you.
Be safe, eat your vegetables, okay? You have a good time.
Goodbye.